All right, hitting the road.
Jack. Was it
3 hours? Do you drive on the right-hand side of the road in Latvia?
Yeah.
Sometimes left.
Sometimes left.
And welcome back to the Digital Distillery Podcast. It is finally a new season of events and travel all over Europe, and I can't wait to bring you all along to hear about the most important topics in digital marketing for 2024. The team and I have been itching for the good weather to start so we could get back on the road and explore what the year has in store for us, and for this first trip, the weather did not disappoint. Looking out the window while I was packing all my gear, the sun was splitting the trees and heating up my hammock to a cozy 26 degrees. This, of course, informed my packing choices, so I was not at all prepared for the next day at the location where it was -2 with 25 centimetres of fresh fluffy snow. I really am running out of excuses for not understanding how weather works in Europe, but no matter. I'm back, I survived with all my toes, and I have so much content to bring you all from the first digital distillery event of the year, the Mountain Edition in Görgl, Austria.
Okay, so we get there, we'll drive up there after breakfast.
Yeah, we can do. We need to be there at 10.
You see, this time at the Digital Distillery, we decided to experiment with a full 2 days of events in two separate venues, both stunning and surprising, which you'll hear a little bit about shortly.
I could nearly do it just like this.
Yeah, you can.
Standing up.
Yeah.
It was just epic. So epic, in fact, that I had nearly 2 hours worth of interview content alone, and this coupled with the fact that when this episode releases, I'll already be at the next event, with another one to follow shortly after that. So, instead of the usual indulging in the sound of my own voice and self-proclaimed witty scripting, I'm pretty much going to bring you the interviews as they happened, split over the 2 days. Also, we may well dig into some of these topics and call back to these interviews in future episodes when there's a bit more breathing room, but for now, we're just going to dive in with no fuss. Well, a little fuss, because before all that, I have to tell you about the first venue that I knew nothing about upon arrival, and it was pretty impressive, to say the least. So this is unexpected, a massive room completely filled with motorbikes. It's a motorbike museum. It was, of all things, a motorcycle museum like nothing I have ever seen before. It's huge. Perched at over 2,000 metres on an outcrop overlooking this jaw-dropping view of the Timmelsjoch Valley, that's the valley that makes up the border pass between Austria and Italy. The Top Mountain Motorcycle Museum is home to over 230 vintage motorbikes from more than 100 manufacturers, with bikes dating back to the late 1800s. Now, I'm not much of a petrolhead myself, but even I was impressed by the sheer number and variety of designs of these beautifully cared for pieces of history. And then, we met Roland.
I bet he can't guess who it is.
What's up, bro? How are you?
A little bit.
How are you doing?
Sweat. Because I was driving the motorbike.
Hi.
The back ground in this room.
There's
a special room.
It's the 4D. It's 4D. It's water in your face.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
I didn't really know what they were talking about, but we were promptly taken into a small dark room at the back of the venue and told to get on what looked like a particularly fancy shopping centre motorbike kids ride. But these were anything but. As soon as we'd all mounted, a floor-to-ceiling, wall-to-wall screen filled our vision, and without any warning, we were tearing off up a narrow mountain path with the bikes kicking and bucking at us like a disgruntled bronco. My brain couldn't comprehend what was happening, that it wasn't real, and it was just awesome. So awesome, in fact, that Consta headbutted the emergency stop button as he leaned into a particularly gnarly corner. hilarity ensued.
Go faster, go faster!
Shaking and weaving a little after the experience, it was time for us to snap out of it and get into the zone to get this bike on the road.
Wow.
And we were off and racing.
Applaus. Testen wir es mal. Sind wir in Tirol? Ja, manche haben schon Schweiß aus dem Piefke, der zuckt. Das ist schwierig. Okay. Ist Deutschland das beste Land der Welt? Ja. Also, zumindest habt ihr das System verstanden.
If you would put on your headphones, please. Mm-hmm. I'll meet you in there.
Hi, my name is Ben. I'm from Brandtrust, strategy consultant for brands.
Welcome to the Digital Distillery.
Thank you.
Is this your first time at one of these events?
It is.
Yeah?
It is, actually.
And what do you think of it so far?
Well, it's stunning. Like, when you look around where it is, like, it was for me an insane ride. So it took me like seven hours from like Vienna to this area. So it means like normally going from Frankfurt to New York.
Wow.
So it should worth it. So, but the moment where I arrived, you see the stunning area, you see the really Cayenne, the total customer experience, like from the arriving, the food, the atmosphere. So like it's just the beginning, but it worth it so far.
Yeah. Absolutely. It was my experience too. I was not at all expecting to come to a location such as this with the mountains. I mean, I was joking earlier that I was sitting in my hammock the day I was packing my bags for the trip in my shorts, reading a book, you know, and then I certainly did not pack any winter clothes. And then the team all arrived, we got on a bus and came up here, and it's some of the best snow I've ever seen, I think.
But, you know, like, that's the new normal. And so you have the snow areas over there. And at the same time, I have looking into on the streets, and there was already people riding a bike with shorts and, like, just a small shirt. So, like, you can go on skiing and have a nice sunburn right after.
Yeah, whether that's a good thing or not, that's debatable. But it's certainly interesting. So in his example on stage, Benedict demonstrated via user reviews two different possible angles for a customer to take and how that's directly based on the intentionality and specifics of your messaging. Are the slopes of Kitzbühel not much fun, quote, hard to ride, or are they the gnarliest, steepest, most hardcore slopes around? Are you game? Type of angle. So you've just come off the stage now as the opening keynote for this event here. I just wanted to get a few of your thoughts on some of the main things that you wanted to get across in that. Some things that I picked up, and my German's not amazing, but you were talking about the importance of specifics in branding, right? And the specific meanings and the specific message. Is that right?
Yeah.
Can you just explain a bit more about that?
You know, like an easy example, like it's for sure sustainability is important, but if everyone talks about I'm sustainable, what makes you different? And if you're saying, yeah, you are also sustainable, what makes you unique? And when you do something the same way, not in a specific way, it means that at the end, you talk about the price, not about the value. And if it's generic, so not specific, yeah, the people, like in our world where we have a lot of offerings, like there are multiple destinations, multiple brands that try to get in your head, and we are filtering it. And if we are not able to give the people orientation with specific and consistency, we will lose them. And that's what I mean. So sustainable is important, but what's your specific type of sustainability? When you say service quality is important, what it's in a nice family way, what's the specific of how you treat your people? What kind of like regionality? Yeah, it's important, but what kind of specific regionality makes you unique? And if so the words are nice, but the more specific you are, the more money you make. If you know your peak performances, try to get it as specific as possible, because brands and humans have something in common. They attract people by specific values.
Mm-hmm. So digging right into, I mean, A, you have to identify what is
one specific thing that is different and meaningful and sets your brand aside, right? The other then is how you get that message across.
Mm-hmm.
I saw one of your examples. Maybe just explain the example with the ski gebiet, there.
You know, like every ski areas, they show a nice ski blazes, sun, happy people. So that means generic. So how you can be unique, specific, and like Kitzbühel, for example, position himself of based on peak performances, they are the most heavy, or I don't know how it's in English, steil.
The steepest.
Steepest slope in the world or in Europe. So with this, you even if you're not skiing, you want to see it or you want to experience.
Mm.
So like by positioning you, you also make the difference to the rest. Yeah. And that's what I say. It's like find your unique value proposition. Clearly position yourself, yeah, to give the people orientation.
Mm, absolutely. I was told that you've recently released or been involved in a study on tourism,
destination. Tourism, hotelry, yeah.
Could you tell us a little bit about that?
We are consulting a lot of those destinations or hotels and so on, and they are quite strong. Yeah, they have a lot of peak performance, but they often are not clear about what makes them or the specifics, the uniqueness, and so on. So we used AIs or big data to analyze by facts what do the brands communicate on their website, what do they communicate in their social media channels. So do they send specific values or generic values? Do they are they clearly positioned? Do they differentiate by the styles or color, architecture, and so on. So we analyzed the entire investment, the brand investment they do every day. And the hard reality was like in like for values, 99 or 90% of the destinations, hotelry just sends generic values like everyone else. The most use the same stock pictures and same buzzwords and same promises marketing like everyone else. And that end up with a lot of investment, but little return. And that was fast, like it was clear that because we know the industry quite well, but seeing that on facts, that was hard.
Yeah, yeah. The last thing I wanted to ask you there is at the end of your talk there, you brought up asking yourself five questions as a brand, right, or as a business. Could you just go through what that is, what those questions are?
So I said, before you go on communication, for example, you just need clarity, clarification about your brand. And that starts with, okay, do you understand, do you know your peak performances, yeah, and are able to condense those peak performances in specific values? Because the people are more, like, they're, like, their attention is little. If you are not able to translate your specific peak performance in specific values, they're not listening. I ask them that question, so that's for us to write it from the beginning. As I said, values attract people. Second question, I said, okay, you invest mostly or think about, spend a lot of time about increasing your awareness, but think about everyone knows you, but no one likes you. Yeah. So start asking you the question, what makes you attractive? How to attract your people based on the peak performance? And then you should know who do you want to attract before you start thinking about increasing it. Awareness.
Yeah.
Because I said, like, awareness you can buy, attractiveness you need to earn.
Yeah, yeah.
Third question is, I will ask myself the uniqueness. What's your number one position? Where you are can't, like, not telling what we can do this as well. So, like, the Streif example, the deepest slope, or the highest, everyone knows the highest mountain in the world. What's the second? Who was the first human on the moon? Who was the second? Who was, and so on. People can remember the number one, but if you're the second World Cup, no one cares, no one knows. So look for the thing where you can be the number one and follow that direction. That's the third. And the best brands from our experience are able to have not only this number one position, they're also able to condense this value in what we call one word equity. So for example, Volvo, if I would ask you, Volvo stands for what kind of value? That's the question I ask them. They say, yeah, security. Who has a Volvo? None of them. Who worked for Volvo? None of them. But everyone knew about that. Yeah.
In 1959, the Volvo engineer Niels Bohlin developed the modern three-point seatbelt. Fun fact, even though the design was patented, the company decided to leave the patent open, making it available to all vehicle manufacturers for use for free.
So based on the peak performance they have, they condensed that value in one word and think about like everyone, every people, every day pays into that promise.
Mm.
And you need to keep up the promise. I say marketing gives a promise, brand needs to keep that. Mm. And for example, like if an accident happens after the accident, like a team goes and analyzes what they can do better. So, and that's really important that like when you have this clarity, you need to invest in this clarity. And that brings me to the last point. I say, okay, brand, you know, it only works when all the people live that value. And you should empower your people to bring that promise to every touch point. So we say you can translate the brand promise or what the brand should stand for in simple questions, simple brand rules. For example, a complex a fish swarm, yeah, is managed by three simple rules. Follow the other, swim to the middle, and don't get too close. And that goes for brands as well. So break the brand into simple rules that everyone can follow and can cross-check at every touch point. And that was normally the five rules, and I said it's 5 + 1 because I said at the end, you need to empower your people and it should be a simple system because you feel that if someone loves the brand, follows or just follows rules or follows a job or loves the brand and understands the brand, then you feel the difference. Yeah. And that was the simple question. I said, it's not about everyone can do that if you want that.
Beautifully said. Thank you so much for your time. Welcome. I look forward to catching up with you later on.
Cool. Thank you.
Bye.
Bei der Reise? Nein, ich glaube, ganz im Gegenteil. Ich glaube, wir fühlen uns alle hier hineingeschmissen gerade.
Thank you very much for the invitation. My name is Markus Bischoff. I'm CEO or one of the members of P8 Marketing. We have offices in Innsbruck, in Salzburg and Vienna. And I think we are a 360 degree marketing communication company in Austria, but also work together with different companies in whole Europe, and yeah, we accompany them from strategy, really business strategy, to marketing topics, digital topic, but also topics like PR and developing of content for different companies, and also installing videos and videos.
So you just came off the stage now. There was a panel discussion called Data Runaway, the Ethical Data Dilemma in Digital Advertising. Could you just tell me what did you discuss up there, and what do you personally think you see as the most pressing ethical challenges related to data usage that we use in advertising today?
I don't see the real data ethic dilemma. Of course, I think there are legal requirements you have to fulfill, and I think there is no discussion if you do or if you don't do it. So I think the data you get in this legal way, I think you can use it. And the thing is to make the customer experience better with it. I think that's the topic. I informed the show one example we are working with is for a tourism region, Oberstdorf Kleinwalsertal. It's not so in the focus in Austria, but it's on the border to Germany, and I think it's a quite big one with 4 million. Übernachtungen.
Stays,
yes. Yeah. 4 million stays in the whole year. And we are thinking there or installing there, I think we call the intelligent destination. So we invite our customers and on different points to give up their opinion about the stay, about their feelings, how satisfied they are with the experience in hardware, but also I think the social components they can feel when they're in the area. With the topic that we want to improve, especially quality.
Mm.
Because we know from our customers, quality is the thing they are able or like or willing to spend more money. So it's all about quality. And I think data is one thing you can improve your quality. You can learn from your customer and you can fulfill their requirements better than without.
So talking about that quality, and you mentioned earlier the personal aspect of it. The personal nature is so important in branding and,
yes,
and in marketing. How are companies, or rather, what are companies going to have to do in order to strike that balance, to get that personal data, but to be able to do it following the new and upcoming regulations?
We improved or developed our own app, our own software to collect the data. Who secures that we only search or collect, not personalized data.
Mm-hmm.
So all our guests are secure that we only collect their opinion. And I think they are free to give us this opinion. We don't pay for it. We don't, they don't get rewards. We say, if you are willing to give us the data, your opinion, and I think people are willing to do it because they want to share their experience, they give us this data. And I think we it's our job to use the data to improve the experience for our customers. So they give the data to us, yeah, that we do something for them, yeah, okay? And
Listen.
Maybe it's the right explanation. We are listening to them. We give them a voice. We get from them information, and then we have the job to improve their experience with this information. So it's quite easy. And I think on under steps when you are digital. Okay, you also give information, and I think it's up to you which information you give to clients and not to clients, to companies. And if it's in the legal area, I think the companies have the mission to use them.
Yeah, and that's the other thing as well that we're going to hear a lot more about today. Even is that by being transparent about what data you want to get,
yes,
you can even build trust with the customers that way as well.
Yes, I think I have also to discuss it with them. I have to make it to a topic in the discussion with the customers and ask them, please give me this information. We will do this function with it. We will increase our product, we develop something for you. I think it's quite necessary if you do this. You are quite transparent to your customer. I think then they are willing to give you the information.
Yeah, and it's better quality information than if they're giving it to you willingly.
Yes, this was a question of one of the people here. They say, maybe how can you trust the information the customer give it to you? There, he explained that there was a study in a German newspaper site, and they say not 50% of the information is right. This might be, but if you are in a dialogue with your customer, if you ask them for the information, why should he give you wrong information in this topic? So we are quite convinced if you're transparent and open to your customer, if you invite them to give you information, if you explain it, it's for increasing your quality, increasing your experience. I think he will give it to you. He will give you the right data. And if he don't want to, he must not. It's up to him.
And final thing I wanted to ask you. You're a sponsor of this event.
Yes.
What made you want to get involved with the Digital Distillery?
I think it's I think 2 points. One thing is to get in contact, I think, with other companies, with other people working the same area. I think on the same topics, of course, maybe there are here new clients or there are here clients. On the other hand, I think it's important that you have this discussion with other experts about the topic. I think especially we discussed about KI.
KI being the German abbreviation for künstliche Intelligenz or artificial intelligence.
I think it's important that you have this discussion with other experts to improve yourself, to get in contact with new KIs, with new programs. On the other hand, to get a feeling from outside your own company, what's the discussion about? What clients want? What people discuss about it? I think this view from outside, or this outside view, is quite important. And so if you have possibilities to have a high quality discussion like this digital distillery with interesting people, it's more than worth to get here and to use the possibility they gave to us.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for your time today. I look forward to seeing you in the break for a cup of coffee, maybe.
Thank you very much.
So, bit of an impromptu interview.
Love them.
Always the best sort.
Yeah.
But can you tell me a little bit about what your company is? Well, first introduce yourself. Sure. And tell us a little bit about what your company is and what you guys do.
Yeah. So I'm Julien. I'm the CEO of Broider. And basically, Broider is a sustainable merchandising company. So essentially what we do is that we customize the curated range of high quality and ethically sourced product for corporate gifting and promotional uses.
Now, how did you come across that idea? Because that's not something I've heard a merchandise company pitch before.
I think it's because it's B2B, so maybe it's less known in a way. I worked for 3 years in the sustainability team of a B2B textile brand, or go-to brand actually, one of our partners right now, called Stan & Stella. And so while I was working there, I was managing a lot of different projects on the supply chain side. So tracing the organic cotton, meeting the farmers. We went to the CMT factories, so the manufacturing factories where they make the garments, met some of the workers there. And my role was to basically put in place projects to reduce our environmental impact, but also improving the working condition. And then I decided to go on the other side, you know, on the downstream, so where the customers are. And one of the mission of the brand was to help the network of his partners. So basically, just to explain a little bit what Stan & Stella does, they make a collection, they design a textile collection to be customized, to be printed. Mm-hmm. So if you want, so for example, what I'm wearing now, you know, it's
looks
overshirt.
Great, by the way.
Thank you. Thank you. It's made of recycled polyester. And basically, the brand, when it was launched in 2012, they realized that obviously sustainability is very, very important and we need to make clothes that are durable, you know, and there's massive, massive waste in the corporate gifting world, right? So because you give the product for free most of the time. So the thing is they've decided, okay, you know what, we're going to change this and we're going to create a product that people actually want to wear. You know, we're going to inspire ourselves from the retail trends and then we're going to make product that respect the environment and the people. And at the time, people were like, wow. So the CEO of Stan & Stella and the founder of Stan & Stella, everybody thought he was crazy because people were like, who is going to buy a more premium product and sustainable at the same time? Because organic cotton is more expensive than commercial cotton in a B2B market where we give, you know, the product for free. And actually he said, well, I'm going to take the chance. I'm going to take the bet. I'm going to take the challenge. And from that day in 2012, when he launched the company, there was a shift in the B2B textile market. And now they're the leader in Europe, you know. And one of the things that the brand wanted to do is that, okay, we're making better clothes, sustainable clothes, but the problem is that printers are going to print on them and they're going to use chemical inks. Doesn't make sense. So what they've decided, and I was part of the decision at the time, is that we need to help them to be more sustainable and use water-based ink and GOTS certified ink. You know, and I think I mentioned during the presentation, the GOTS certification. And that's one thing that, you know, these guys, the resellers, the printers, etc., they can implement to, you know, produce more responsibly. And so I was basically helping them to achieve and obtain that certification. While doing this, you know, I went across the best printers because obviously, you know, they're decided with who they work, you know, because normally when you create a B2B textile brand, you want to sell as much as you can, right? It's all about volume because it's low prices. So you try to find all the distributors. The CEO and founder of Stan & Stella said, no, I don't want to do that. I want to work with 1% of the market and I want to select who is going to print off my product because I want to close close the loop, and I want to provide a fully organic product to the corporate gifting world.
Yeah, that's a really admirable step and brave step to take.
I thought so too as well, and I was bought in the vision. And then by, you know, visiting all those customers and, you know, all those printers, distributors, I realized that everyone in Europe, like all these players, they all sell the same overloaded range of low-cost, unethically sourced products from the same suppliers. There's big suppliers in Asia, and everybody is sourcing from there. And they have massive catalog, like 1,000, you know, products. They don't specialize in any type of specific products, and they sell everything because they want to sell as much as they can, right? And so I thought to myself, wow, that's against what you and me want in terms of offering, right? The offering is not there in terms of durability, in terms of qualitative. And so I said to myself, well, we can change that. You know, there's a gap there. Even though the market is driven by price, I think we can change the mindset and, you know, it's coming up with a product that is more qualitative and sustainable. And that's how basically Broidar emerged.
Yeah, and by all accounts, successfully.
It's growing. It's not yet where I want it to be. We have big ambition, obviously, but it's been a year and a half now, and really happy with the progress that we made already this first quarter. You know, we're working with long-term clients. Last year was a bit, because it's a year and a half, you know, we've just launched a business. And last year was a bit of a, okay, we're going to find which segment is willing to actually pay the price for better quality product and also sustain product, you know. You can't just target everyone. So you have to target your efforts and, you know, the money to invest into finding the right segment. And obviously we want to sell to everyone, but it's difficult. So this year we found our target market, and we focus a lot on tech companies, but also we're actually working also with the automotive industry. Yeah. And we some people are like, oh, why are you talking to these guys? And we do believe that actually these guys need more help on the sustainability side than any other industry, right? And they're also putting in place, you know, initiative to shift towards more sustainable practices and, you know, electric cars and things like that. So since this first quarter, super happy with the progress that we made. We're four people now, four co-founders. We're looking to recruit someone else to help us on the operation. So life is amazing.
Just final thing is just, could you just give us some impressions about this event? Because this is the first digital distillery you've been to, presumably. So what have you thought about the event so far?
Super insightful. But actually, it sounds insightful because I don't speak German, so it's a bit difficult. But it felt like there was very, you know, insightful people, you know, speaking about really important topics, you know, sustainability, but also AI and tech-related branding, etc. So, and, you know, I was asking Danny to translate a few part of the different presentation, panel talks. So I think I was able to get an overall ideas of the key messages, you know. So I think that was really qualitative, interesting. But I think the location is just amazing, right? Like I've never been actually here, like in Austria. I've never been here. So first time, and I love the mountain, you know, I always go skiing. And so coming back now, you know, normally I always ski earlier during the year. So coming back now, and I don't know about you, but like the air in the mountain just hit different.
Absolutely.
And it's just so, it just makes you feel just, I don't know, better, more happy. And so, from today was great. I was already great and then excited for what's going to happen tomorrow.
Wonderful. Thank you. I think it's probably about time for us to go get a beer.
Perfect. So I love that. Amazing. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Bye-bye. And a beer we did get. Thank you for joining us today on the Digital Distillery Podcast. You can find links to our guests and locations in the show notes. As I said at the beginning, I'm already at the next event in Hamburg and will bring you the lowdown from there in a couple of weeks. But until then, peace out, hit us up if you have anything to say, we always love hearing from you, and a huge thank you to our guests, Benedikt Streb from Brand Trust, Marcus Bischoff from P8, and Julian from Broider. Also, we should have a video recap up of the event by now with some wicked drone footage of the event and the beautiful snowy scenery, which you can hopefully find the link for in the show notes. Thanks also to the usuals, Nadia Koski and Dennis Kirshner, as well as the rest of my team, Konstantins Makarovs, Jana Olova, Ingus Heiders, and a special shout out to Alex, who, as we speak, is on the trot of organising 4 events in 3 weeks. You're doing an amazing job, Alex. That's it from me. We'll catch you next time on the Digital Distillery Podcast.